This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room is changing the way we talk sports.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped on the 16th day of April 2021. We're going to be breaking down the games that took place last night, previewing this weekend that actually has some big games. Yes, you can have a big, important game in the middle of April that impacts the rest of the season. And we honor a Dodger hero who made his huge impact on this day and whose deeds, acts, personality, and everything he represented can still reverberate all throughout baseball, and certainly here in Los Angeles. And no, I'm not talking about Jackie Robinson. This show is available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. As we're rounding third and heading for home for all this awfulness that we've been going through for the last year, please stay smart. We're almost there. Please don't go out when you don't need to. Still wear your mask and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Dodgers with my pal Jeff Snyder. And you can follow us at Locked On MLB Pods on Twitter. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. So let's do a quick round the horn of what happened in the games yesterday. The Red Sox winning streak finally came to an end at 9 games. There was a 3-run double by Verdugo in the 8th that made me think, they're going to actually win this thing. It's going to be a 10-game winning streak. But alas, Kepler hit a walk-off hit in the bottom of the 9th, and the Twins wound up winning the game. 9-4 is still not a bad start. Then some of the heroes from yesterday would include Michael Pineda, who pitched 7 innings of shutout ball against the Red Sox. Another big hero would have been Justin Turner, who got on base 4 times, homered, 3-run home run. The Dodgers had a come from behind victory and defeated the Colorado Rockies as they moved to 11-2. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the Dodgers are pretty good. Now, the Blue Jays smacked around the Yankees in the last few days, and Vladdy Guerrero came out and had a terrific game against Kansas City, going 3-for-5. But guess what? The Royals won again. The Royals won again, defeating the Blue Jays 7-5. Another surprising thing, my new adopted team, the Mariners, won a pair of close, dramatic games against the Baltimore Orioles. They came out. They came from behind to win the first game 4-2. And then in a makeup of the April 14th game, Dunn pitched the Mariners to a 2-1 victory. And you got to see Mitch Haniger hit a dramatic home run in the Mariners' victory. So the reason I'm going to point out that sweep of that series against the Orioles, sweep of that doubleheader against the Orioles. Who knows what the Nationals are? One day they get blown out. Next day they blow the other team out. And today they hand the ball to Patrick Corbin, and they got the doors blown off again, this time 11-6 by the Arizona Diamondbacks. No back-to-back, no hitters for the White Sox. Lynn lost the game. Ciavalli, who I believe that's how you pronounce his name. Please forgive me. I never say his name out loud, but the Indians got another solid game. 4-2, they win over the White Sox. The Braves, with the help of a dramatic pinch hit home run by Pablo Sandoval and Dansby Swanson getting a couple of big hits, including a walk-off, and Atlanta starting to put some stuff together, and they won 7-6. Good news for the Mets. They had a day where Jacob DeGrom was scheduled to pitch, and they did not lose. That's because they got rained out, as the Mets and Phillies got rained out, and the Mets are heading off to Colorado, the exact place everybody wants to pitch. Now, the A's won again. Remember how awful the A's were starting the season? Well, then they're now almost at 500. They're at 6-7. They're beginning to right the ship. The Rangers won. They're 6-7. The Rays lost again, and they're falling in the standings. And the Padres dusted themselves off after losing the Musgrove game, and Paddock got the victory. Stammen pitched a 3-inning save as San Diego took care of the Pirates 8-3. Now, we're reviewing something here. The Red Sox, despite the loss, have a 3-game lead over Toronto. Tampa Bay is on a 3-game losing streak, so they are tied with Baltimore at the bottom of the standings. So the Red Sox are in first place. Remember I mentioned how the Royals are in the middle of a 3-game winning streak? The Royals are in first place. Remember how I mentioned the Mariners swept that doubleheader against Baltimore? The Mariners are in first place. You know I can't pull the if the playoffs started today, but if they did, your division champs would be the Red Sox, Royals, and Mariners, and the wild card game would be the Angels versus the Indians. I would be perfectly fine with all of those events happening. That all is something that would get the Sully seal of approval. But it just goes to show that the American League, like I predicted, like everyone else who had a set of eyes shows, it's going to be a scrum. There's no one dominant team, and no team is asserting itself, certainly at this point. Not the Yankees, not the Astros, not the White Sox. And we're getting here in the middle of April. And, you know, look at, do I think that the Red Sox, Royals, and Mariners are going to be the division champs? No, but take a snapshot of the standings right now, Royals, Red Sox, and Mariners fans. It may not look like this again. Now, you take a look at the National League at this point. The Mets are in first place. Okay, maybe that can happen. I still think that the Atlanta Braves are going to be the best team. The Brewers and the Reds remain the top of the standings for the Central. I think the Reds got off to a nice fast start, and I think eventually they'll come back down to earth. And I still think this is the Cardinals' division to lose. And then, of course, you have the Giants off to a tremendous start, and yet they're tied with the Dodgers and Padres, who just right now look like the best teams. So that's a quick look around of what happened in baseball yesterday. We're going to preview what's going to happen in baseball over the weekend. And yes, there is a big, big series that should have an impact right up until the final day of the season. But let me just tell you something, that this episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price point. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into your special person's life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the word 10x10. This collection features high-quality fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and fairly priced so you can give your special someone something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring that the special person in your life will treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10 for 10, only at BlueNile.com. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Locked On Today. Get all your sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, let's take a preview of what we're going to be looking at for this upcoming weekend. And yes, there are important games being played. At least one game that could have significant, or one series that could have significant consequences for the rest of the season. The first series right out of the gate is an interesting one, as the Braves, who, look, they're not in first place. I think they're going to be by the end of the year. The Braves are looking to sort of right the ship. It was a very dramatic win yesterday, and they're going to be playing the Cubs, who, as of this recording, it's 7:19 in the morning when I'm recording this. This game is going to start at 11 o'clock Los Angeles time, and the Cubs still don't have their starting pitcher announced. It's interesting, at least from my point of view, as the Cubs are off to a, I mean, not a horrible start, 5-7, but obviously not jumping out of the gate quickly. And I do believe, I think everyone else in the world believes, that the Cubs are kind of itching to rebuild, to put two sticks of dynamite in the team that won the World Series a few years ago and just start again for reasons that make absolutely no sense. Zero sense. The same thing as the Red Sox are putting something nice together right now so far this year. Gee whiz, I wonder if it would have been nice to have Mookie Betts in the middle of that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say maybe that would have worked. But I digress. The Cubs, I don't understand their desire to destroy. But I also think the nanosecond that the Cubs go on a nosedive, one of those parabolic flight nosedives that cause zero gravity, that you'll start to see a sell-off. And I think it will happen sooner rather than later, because they could probably get more for the veterans if they could trade them off, saying, hey, you don't just get them for the final 2 months of the season. You could have Bryant, you could have Rizzo, you could have Baez, or whomever else they're going to trade off. I mean, I have a better chance of finishing the season with the Cubs than Jake Arrieta does. So I'm going to keep my eye on the Cubs to see when they start to fall apart. The Diamondbacks are going to continue their series against the Nationals. Former Diamondback Max Scherzer, I bet you forgot he was a Diamondback at one point in his career. Nationals are off to a terrible start in terms of the standings. I think they've got too much talent to remain falling apart like that, but who knows? Who knows if this is the end for Scherzer? Now, the Cardinals are playing the Phillies. Carlos Martinez wants to right the wrong. Eflin is starting for the Phillies. An interesting series as the Rays are going to be playing the Yankees. And the Yankees starting pitching is a gigantic question mark at this point. Just specifically for today, they are also to be determined. And any series between the Rays and the Yankees is going to be important, because going into the year, a lot of people thought those were the two best teams. The Yankees seemed to have the most talent, and the Rays are the defending division champion and, oh yeah, the defending American League champion. So every Rays-Yankee game is going to have a little bit of importance. A battle for Ohio with two teams with identical records at this point are the Indians and the Reds, 7-5, Allen against Hoffman in there. A battle of the Sox. Now, if you would tell me at this point that one of the teams that has Sox in their name was going to be 9-4 and the other was going to be 6-7, I would have said, well, obviously the White Sox are 9-4, but no, it's the Red Sox. Pivetta is pitching, and he's won his first two starts. It should be interesting to see if the Red Sox could dust themselves off of finally losing a game in Minnesota. Desclafani is going to be pitching for the surprising Giants against the talented Marlins. We're going to see what's going to happen there. The Orioles and the Rangers, two teams that nobody picked to do anything, are going to face off. Fultonewicz is going for Texas. Lopez is going for Baltimore. The Blue Jays are leaving Dunedin to head to Kansas City. Minor is going to be pitching for Kansas City. Mats, who's off to a wonderful start for Toronto, is going to be pitching for the Blue Jays. The Royals, your first place Royals, who I did begin the season saying that I think the Royals were going to be contenders because I felt that there was no surefire runaway team in the American League. I stand by that. And the fact that they're off to a decent start shows that, hey, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that happens, you could play for the Pirates, who despite going 5-8 so far, I do not see them doing anything but losing. The high water mark for them is a 95 loss season for me. The Brewers looks like they may have dusted themselves a little bit off. They're getting wonderful, wonderful pitching. And Hauser's pitching for the Brewers today against Brubaker. Now, DeGrom is pitching, which means the Mets are probably going to lose. And I'll tell you, here's something. DeGrom is going to be pitching in Colorado against Gonzalez, okay? Here's probably what's going to happen. DeGrom's probably going to throw, like, it's Coors Field. So you can't throw a shutout in Coors Field. So he's probably going to go, like, 7 innings, 3 runs, striking out 12, which is a great Coors Field start. But the Mets will be shut out in Coors Field. because it's DeGrom. Now, the Angels in first place against the Twins, who finished in first place the last couple of years. And Thorpe is going to be making his first start of the day. We're going to see if Trout and company can dust themselves off of a couple of bad losses that they had against the Kansas City Royals. The Red Hot A's are going to be playing their playoff nemesis, the Detroit Tigers. And Urania is pitching for the Tigers, and he's been awful. He's a talented pitcher. I don't know what has happened to him. Montas was off to a terrible start as well for the A's, so something's got to give. If there's any game that looks like it's going to be a 10-9 blowout, it's that. Hey, the Astros are kind of floundering right now after getting off to that hot start. They're at even 500, and they're going up against the Mariners. If the Mariners want to do anything surprising this year, they have to play well against the Astros and the A's, the teams, and the first place Angels, the teams that are expected to contend. If you're going to be a surprise contender, the way you remain a surprise contender is to win those head-to-head games, no matter what part of the year they're in. So it's Urquidy versus Kikuchi of the Mariners. I think I never say his name out loud. I just tried to. If I messed it up, hey, what are you going to do? It happens from time to time. And the Mariners are going to try to remain in first place and see if they can lower their magic number from 150. Now, there is that one big game, a big game that could very well have an impact right through the end of the season, and that is the Dodgers are going to San Diego to play the Padres. And I'm dead serious. This is a huge game. This is a huge series. Sally, there's so much time. Yes, there's so much time in this season. Yes, if the Dodgers get swept, or the Padres get swept, then there's plenty of time to right the ship. But again, here's the deal. These are two teams that are going to be clawing for the NL West title. The difference between winning the NL West and being a wild card team from the NL West is the difference probably between having home field advantage through the playoffs and having to play a one-game playoff and maybe having to face someone like a Jacob DeGrom in a do-or-die game. And when you get to the end of the year, there have been several times where you got to the end of the year where one game, you said, oh, if we had just won one game somewhere along the way, it would have changed the fate of everything. I mean, the final game of the season, if the Rockies had won one more game, or the Dodgers had lost one more game, or if they had the Rockies had won one more head-to-head game with LA in 2018, they would have had the division title, and the Dodgers would have been stuck in the wild card game. And who knows how that playoff would have been different? You have had seasons where it gets down to the final game, and you want to be in the position where the other team is trying to catch up. I bet only a couple of games are going to be the difference between the NL West and a wild card berth for the Dodgers and the Padres. So guess what? You want to win these games. They count just as much. Hell, I remember there was a day in 1996 where the Padres and Dodgers were facing off, and the Padres wound up winning the game in the division that final weekend of the season. And it was the difference between, are you a wild card team or are you the division winner? And one of the players who was celebrating on that field in Dodger Stadium against the Dodgers is the topic of the final segment of the show. But we're going to first, I want to just talk a little bit about Built Bar, because Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar out there. You know, you think about the great flavors that Built Bar has. I happen to love the raspberry covered in chocolate. I happen to love the mint brownie. I love the banana bread. I love the double chocolate. I love so many of these. The German chocolate, they're all 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, they taste great. But if you're trying to be health conscious, it's good for you too. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging on a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. They're great for the keto diet. I happen to really love cookies and cream. which has 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 grams of net carb. You get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON15, you get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And now, let's talk a little bit about Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. You've got the NBA playoffs coming up, Stanley Cup playoffs coming up. You got Major League Baseball. They even cover awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook expert. Promo code Locked On. Be a waiver wire winner with the Locked On Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's a daily fantasy baseball podcast hosted by veteran fantasy analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience to offer strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Follow Locked On Fantasy Baseball on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. I referred to that celebration in Dodger Stadium as the Padres won the division in 1996. They didn't get very far. They got swept by the Cardinals. But one of the players who was celebrating in the Padres dugout and locker room, there's a picture of him being sprayed by his teammate, Ricky Henderson. I bet you forgot Ricky Henderson played for the San Diego Padres that year in the playoffs. That was Fernando Valenzuela. Fernando Valenzuela is 60 years old, and 40 years ago today, one of the most significant moments in the history of the Los Angeles Dodgers took place. And that was Valenzuela was given this opening day assignment by Tommy Lasorda. It was supposed to go to Jerry Royce. Dodgers had a really deep pitching staff that year, including Bert Hooten, including Bob Welch, including Jerry Royce. But the ball was handed to Valenzuela because it was supposed to be Royce's turn to start, but he had an injury and he had to be scratched at the last minute. And Lasorda knew he made a mistake the year before because the Dodgers had to play a one-game playoff. As I mentioned, those series, those head-to-head games matter, and the Astros and the Dodgers finished the 1980 season tied. And he thought of handing the starting pitching assignment to this 19-year-old kid who pitched great out of the bullpen at the end of the 1990 season, but he decided not to, and the Dodgers lost the one-game playoff. This time he handed the ball to Fernando Valenzuela, and practically nobody knew who the kid was. I mean, I'm sure people following the Dodgers minor league system knew, but he came out in a packed house of over 50,000 people and threw a five-hit shutout. And with that, the Dodgers won that game, and then he pitched another shutout. He pitched in the first three games were complete game victories. He shut out San Diego. He shut out the Astros. His stats that he put together in to begin the season were nothing short of mind-boggling in terms of what he did out of the stretch. He had no earned runs in the first 17 two-thirds innings as a reliever, but what he was doing as a starting pitcher was simply dominating the game with complete game after complete game after complete game, and doing it in a way that, quite frankly, captured the imagination of everybody watching the game. Because first, I mean, just there was this, the sheer logic of it. I mean, I'm going to his baseballreference.com, the single greatest website in the history of the planet Earth. I mean, his first five starts were complete games, and he let up one run. And he finished his season leading the league in so many major categories, including games started, innings pitched, strikeouts, complete games, eight shutouts, and was the tonic that baseball needed in so many ways because he was a great feel-good story, and the strike took place in the middle of the season. And the great pitching of Fernando helped make baseball come back after the strike and help, you know, take people's mind off of the mess that was that strike And that, of course, also made a mess of the postseason because the Dodgers wound up getting in, and Fernando became a main reason why the Dodgers wound up winning the World Series. He got three postseason wins, including the game that clinched the National League Championship Series against Montreal, through a complete game against the Houston Astros in the first round, and then wiggled out of early trouble and threw a complete game victory against the Yankees that helped turn that World Series around. And just in terms of the numbers, he had put up great numbers as he won the Cy Young Award and the Rookie of the Year. And he was not a one-hit wonder. Lest we forget, Fernando was still an all-star caliber pitcher throughout the, from the early to the mid 1980s. He was 200 some odd wins a year. He was the runner-up to the Cy Young Award in 1986, runner-up to Mike Scott. Many years he would lead the league in innings pitched, complete games. He was a 21-game winner back when people still cared about that, 1986. Put up big win totals through tons of innings. And unfortunately, injuries kept him off the roster when they won the World Series in 1988. But he came back in 1990 and wound up throwing a no-hitter in his final year pitching with the Dodgers. Now, the 90s were a little bit of Fernando wandering through the woods as he bounced around between the Angels, went back to Mexico to play, played for Baltimore, Philadelphia. He played for the Padres, as I mentioned. He finished his career as a spot starter with the St. Louis Cardinals. But then he came back and has become an announcer and a beloved figure at Dodger Stadium. But there's more to Fernando than that. And it was kind of the mythology of Fernando. He was like a piece of folklore that he came from this obscure tiny town in Mexico to seemingly come out of nowhere and dominate Major League Baseball for that 81 season. And also show that he wasn't a flash in the pan. This wasn't a Mark Fidrich situation where he had that one great year and then flamed out. And for the Mexican-American community, he was their guy. Because one of the reasons he was so popular was that he just looked like a regular guy. He didn't look like an Adonis. He looked like a great athlete. He had a little pudgy, a little round face. His hair was a bit of a mess. He looked like a guy going to the game. He didn't look like a guy who was a great pitcher. And that helps create that mythology of, as a baseball fan, that could be me. Nobody watches a hockey player or a football player or a basketball player and say, hey, that could be me. No, you'll be destroyed. Those are physical beings. Like if you're a hockey player, you've got to be incredibly athletic. You got to be able to skate and you got to be able to take a punch to the face. You know, basketball players are like bizarrely tall. I mean, that short player on the basketball court is 6'2". And you know, football players look like an angry Bruce Banner. But you could be a baseball player and look like Tony Gwynn or Babe Ruth or Greg Maddux or Fernando. That was a huge, huge figure for the Dodgers to win back Mexican-American fans who had hated the Dodgers since the building of Dodger Stadium. The building of Dodger Stadium is a really ugly history. As there was the Battle of Chavez Ravine. Chavez Ravine was a predominantly Mexican-American community that houses were leveled on the pretense of public housing being built in Los Angeles. What was actually happening is land was being cleared out so they could build a baseball stadium. And there's shots on television, there's film crews showing of people being forcibly removed from their houses to have their houses destroyed so the Dodgers could play at a new stadium instead of playing in L.A. Wrigley Field where the minor league Angels used to play because the O'Malley said, no, we want a bigger stadium, so tear these people out of their homes. So the Dodgers for generations became an ugly symbol for the Mexican-American community of basically colonial oppression. And they stayed away from the Dodger games in droves until Fernando arrived. And Fernando became the guy. In fact, I've been living in Los Angeles County since 2008. And I've seen a lot of people wearing jerseys, all sorts of jerseys. When I arrived here, Manny Ramirez was with the Dodgers. So there's a lot of Manny shirts. And there have been a lot of Justin Turner shirts, Clayton Kershaw shirts, Mookie Betts shirts, Cody Bellinger shirts, Matt Kemp shirts, you know, Jock Peterson shirts, Andre Ethier. There have been a rotation of shirts and people wearing stuff, and I've seen them all. But the one consistent one is number 34. You see people wearing 34 jerseys all the time because of what Fernando represented to the team and to the community and to the mythology. And I'm sure we could use tweezers and pick apart what really happened with Fernando and Fernando Mania and see it really wasn't that innocent. It wasn't that cool. And you know what? Part of me doesn't want to kill the mythology because I like that. I like the story. I like the narrative. I like the fact that it's American folklore. It's American myth. And like all myths, it probably has some basis in truth and some basis in exaggeration. It's a story of what makes us drawn to baseball. That is, a guy who doesn't have the physical gifts of a Hercules, looks like a regular person, but can get up there and they can throw the ball and get them out and do it in a way where they're doing it, where it looks like they're having fun. And it looks like it's in a way that we could all relate to. Then that could be me. That's why people loved Fidrich in the 70s. That's why people like the quirky players and some of the players, like, as I mentioned, Tony Gwynn, who could be the best hitter in baseball with a big belly. We like that because it brings us closer to who the players are. And the reverberation of Fernando Mania 40 years ago today can still be felt. He's still beloved. As I mentioned, people still wear the jerseys left and right. I look at some of the people wearing the jersey. I'm like, you're not old enough to remember Fernando Mania. I was 9. I remember it. But you weren't 9 then. Nope. But he was the person who drew so many people to the Dodgers and that sort of Dodger universe. He's an announcer for the Dodgers right now, the Spanish language broadcast. And I've been to many Dodger games where the camera will just turn to Fernando in the broadcast booth, and the place gives him a huge ovation as if to say thank you. Thank you for Fernando Mania. Thank you for the 81 World Series title. Thank you for all of that. Man, the 80s in Los Angeles, sports-wise, Dodgers won 2 World Series titles. The Lakers won a ton of titles. The Raiders showed up and they won a Super Bowl. Wayne Gretzky even showed up. You had the Olympics show up. It was sort of wild time, sports time in Los Angeles in the 1980s, but I digress. So 40 years ago, we had Fernando Mania, and 40 years later, we could still feel it. I know someone will eventually write a dark expose about Fernando Mania, and I get it. That being said, I kind of like the myth. So this is going to be a fun week of baseball, and yes, there are big, big games, because some of these games, when we're at the end of the year, mark my words, we're going to be looking back on, oh, if they had only won those games in April, they wouldn't have to win those now. So go to the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Locked On MLB for the 16th day of April, 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.